Episode 144 von Winter Day. Hockey, O'Clock, Rick Schofield, Stürmer, HC Pustertal.
I think I've been pretty consistent in my career. I think that's one thing I've always kind of been proud of myself for. You know, what you see is kind of what you get. You know, not going to go dangle down the whole ice like some players in this league. But, you know, I just keep doing the same things every night, and hopefully that breeds success. So just being able to be there and, like, support the players, I think, in a hockey sense, reliable. You know, I always pride myself on, you know, being a good outlet pass for D-men, you know, so that if they're in trouble, I'm always there for them. And vice versa for wingers, too.
Win today, hockey, O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird's jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
Oh,
it's gone.
Oh, what a goal. It doesn't get any better than this.
It is indeed a debut here on episode 144 of Win Today Hockey O'Clock. It is not only the first time that he's on, but it's also overdue that he's on. He's been blessing the league with his play for a full decade now. He's returned after a year in the German Hockey League. He's just recorded his 400th point in the Ebel and or Ice League. He's a forward with the HC Pustertal. He's, of course, Rick Schofield. And Rick, so happy that you're jumping onto Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
Thanks so much for having me. You know, I've kind of been a fan of this podcast for a few years now, so it's an honor to be a part of. And to be honest with you, it's my first podcast, so I'm enjoying it so far.
Whoa. Indeed, a debut. And thanks so much for the kind words. Kind of blushing here, but I want to, because I'm so bad with getting lauded, and I never know how to react. So I'm just kind of moving to one of the bits and pieces that I mentioned during the intro. 10 years in the league, 400 scorer points. How does that sound to you?
honestly, it doesn't seem true. I mean, if you would have told me 10 years ago that I'd still be in this league and, you know, have a pretty decent career and just enjoy myself the way I have been, like, I would have called you a liar. You know what? I didn't plan on playing this long. You know, I was always content with playing maybe a couple years in Europe and heading back home to kind of start, like, the real world, you know, the real world job that people talk about. But I've been really blessed to play in some great spots. Been able to play on this my fifth team. I mean, kind of moving around a lot, but at the same time, I've been fortunate to live in like five amazing places, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Pretty decent career. I guess it has to be one of the understatements of the Still Young podcast season. You've been one of the most productive import players this league has ever seen. Playing 481 games, the last one yesterday. We're recording this on a Monday. You won a game with a new team on your old stomping grounds, kind of, in Linz. Recorded your 400th point there and the 399th for that matter. How was it to play that game in one of your old stomping grounds? Granted, there are a few.
That's an understatement as well. No, it was awesome. I love going back to Linz. I think it's a fantastic city, a great organization. And that rink, you know, I have so many good memories of playing there, and it's very familiar to me. I still have some good friends there. You know, I got to catch up with all the coaches after the game. You know, obviously Phil was an ex-teammate of mine, and Panks and Zooks. And so it was a lot of fun. And to be honest with you, I had no idea it was my 400th point. Until you just told me right now. So I think it definitely made it feel a little bit more special looking back now.
Nice. So let me be the first one to congratulate you on the 400th point. Also, there's still a little bit of room between you and John Hughes, the most productive import player that we've ever had in the league. But maybe if you play long enough, you eventually might catch him. Still, great start to the season. your co-leaders of the standings together with Red Bull Salzburg. And everybody right before the season, after Pusatar kind of went onto a spending spree, said they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And granted, there are a lot of preseason favorites, and some of them eventually flame out during the early stages of the season. But what has made you successful so far? Again, granted, the sample size has only been 4 games now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, kind of coming into this year, I saw some of the players that you know, the team was signing. Obviously, with guys like Zach Sill or Akeson and Stanton, guys coming in from the German league. It's, you know, these are great players, and I was kind of blown away that we had them all. So I was happy to join. And then when you add in, you know, Italo Canadians like Patan and Dante Hanoun, Jake Smith, like it's kind of exciting. You know, I knew that we were going to have a pretty strong team, or at least we should this year. And so far, I've been pretty happy with it. I mean, we're definitely making a lot of mistakes and we're taking a lot of penalties, but that's the kind of stuff that we can correct over time. You know, I'm pretty pleased with the results so far. I think we're a hardworking team, and that's the kind of stuff that, you know, it's hard to change. You know, if your team's skilled but not hardworking, you know, you're going to struggle. But I feel like we kind of have a happy medium between the two right now. And I think we're a deep team, and that's what's giving us a lot of success. You know, it's kind of trial by everyone. You know, we have everyone chipping in right now, and the points are kind of spread out, and we're getting good defense, good goaltending, and good offensive ability right now.
This kind of leads me to a natural follow-up question, just pointing out to fans, we're again recording this on Monday. There will be a game played in between this recording and when the podcast appears or comes out early Wednesday. It's going to be against Klagenfurt. It's going to be a home game played tomorrow night. Very exciting one that will probably tell a lot of stories about both teams. You've been part of a couple of teams in this league. You won a championship your first year. You had several deep playoff runs. You've seen so many different places, so many different locker rooms. Is there kind of like a lowest common denominator early in the season for telling if there'll be sustained success? You mentioned a couple of the factors, like being deep obviously helps, having good scorers, having good defense. But what's the lowest common denominator a team needs to have to make things click, for the lack of a better word?
To me, it's kind of the character of the guys in the room. And I think this year, as well as in years past, like, we've had some really good character guys. You know, a team, you kind of need your top players to be your top players. But, you know, everyone's role is important. And I think this year, because we're so deep, that everyone kind of has that feeling of, you know, I got to do my job, and, you know, I'm going to help the team win. And on top of that, you know, just a good group of guys. Like, we've had a lot of fun so far. We've been able to kind of do some team building stuff that's brought us a little bit closer. We actually hiked a mountain and stayed at a hut overnight, and obviously enjoyed ourselves there. And then another trip to Oktoberfest with the whole team. So it's things like that that kind of bring us together too. And then we, you know, we're a tight knit team right now. And, you know, we're just a bunch of buddies, like, get to play with each other. So
if you take a longer look at some of the stats, and again, early season stats, only 4 games that have been played so far. One thing that jumps out is the special teams on kind of both sides of the medal, so to speak. You're leading the league in with your power play percentage. You scored 5 power play goals on 19 man advantages. And you were talking about the many penalties that you took, 23 total penalties in 4 games. That is indeed a lot, but it killed off 21, and it gives you the second best penalty killing. And it's always interesting when special teams start to click. And again, if it's sustainable or not, but how rare and uncommon is it to have both sides of the special team, so to speak, work so well so early in the year?
It's definitely rare. You know what? This isn't something that happens all the time. And I give a lot of credit to the coaches, especially with the penalty kill. And then the guys that we have, you know, we have guys like Andrew Gasson and Mantinger, who are just like unbelievable penalty killers. Like Sill and Catenacci obviously kill as a pair. And I think there's a lot of experience there in terms of the penalty kill. And then when you look at the power play, there's also a ton of experience. I mean, we have some really skilled guys this year, like Morley, Akison, Patan. You know, I get to play on a unit with those guys. And my whole thing is like, just give the puck to them and something's going to happen. You know, they can make plays. So I think for the power play, it's definitely rare to have this much talent and this much success. And obviously with hard work, we can hopefully sustain this this type of percentage. And obviously PK, hopefully we can not take as many, but with the guys that we have some really good leaders that, you know, their hard work and their ability to get in shot lanes and stuff like that, everything that makes a penalty kill very successful, we kind of have right now. So
the first reason for the successful penalty killing you mentioned was the coaches. Let's cut them some slack and take us maybe inside the coaches room. What are the coaches doing, preaching, teaching that makes this version of Pulsatar's penalty kill so successful early in the year?
I think just the way we're killing right now is we're kind of trying to be as smart as possible here. We're trying to take away the most dangerous plays. The plays that, you know, if they go back door, it's an easy goal. We're trying to, obviously our goalie's been both Bernie and Smitty have been really good so far. And we try to give them the best opportunity. So the coaches have definitely just been preaching, you know, let the goalie see, try to limit, you know, the cross ice plays. Obviously those are the toughest plays, but, and then just being able to kind of see what the other team does so far. And, you know, guys can get their mind around it. And obviously we practice it quite a bit.
The interesting thing is it sounds so cliche, but sometimes the cliches ring the truest somehow. And that appears to be the case with Hatsi Pulsatar too. And once I knew that you'd be jumping on the podcast, I tried to enlighten my listeners as usual and broaden their horizons a little bit. There might be new fans of this show and new fans of the league who maybe haven't heard of Rick Schofield. So I asked one of your old coaches to provide me with a little insight and a little more context as regards who Rick Schofield is. And one of them, one of the coaches I asked gladly followed up, and it's of course no one else than Greg Holst. And he takes us back to the season 2015-2016 when you were with Villach. And I think it will be mostly about something that happened in spring. But you know what? Let's just listen in to Greg Holst and what he had to say about yourself.
You know, when you're a coach, you come across a lot of players. Some have great attitudes, some do not. And some are really special, and you don't forget them and what they contributed to your team. And Rick Schofield is very high on my list. As a player, as a gentleman, in the dressing room and on the ice. When I took over Villach in 2016-17, I think it was late November, Schofield was on the team. And Pansy, and we had a lot of pretty good guys, Hunter, Joner. We had a lot of good guys. But we had to make some changes, and we had to start working for JP Lamoureux. because he was kind of saving their bacon quite a bit. So we changed a few things and we went to four lines, and that is tough to accept for certain players. But Rick bought in 100%. He just was quietly, he listened, he watched, he went on the ice, he did his job. And when him and Pantsy, Ziga Pantsy, were on the same line quite a lot, these two guys were magic together. We won so many games, 2-1, 3-2, and these two players came up with huge goals. You know, then we actually really got it going. We got into the playoffs against Vienna. And one highlight that I'll never forget, and either will our fans, I think it was game 2 at home against Vienna. Place is rocking. We get into overtime. Early in overtime, Rick Schofield gets a penalty shot. Makes a great move. I believe it was to the forehand and scores. What an exciting moment. The fans went absolutely crazy. So it's really funny because I did not know if I was going to coach the next year. But we were really successful. We damn near made the freaking finals. We did lose Santorelli. And we lost in 6 in the semis to Salzburg. And we knew if we could score 3 goals, we could win. All 4 games we lost were 2-1. So that was pretty exciting. And Rick Schofield definitely led the way. So I go into management and I say, guys, you got to sign Schofield and you got to sign Pantsy right away. You know, I don't know if I'm going to be coaching, but these two guys are absolutely key. They have great chemistry together. I think they played at Boatswain together also. So management said, you know what? Yeah, we really like them, but I think let's wait till after the season and maybe we'll get them cheaper. Well, you know the end of that story. Both guys were gone, and very, very thankful to have coached Rick Schofield. It was a pleasure. And when I saw his name in Pustertal this year, we went over who I thought was going to be one of the most improved teams. I know they made lots of moves, but when I saw Rick Schofield's name on that team, I said they are a top 6 team led by Rick Schofield. I wish him lots of luck. He's a gentleman and he's a great hockey player.
Very high praise from one of the really good guys this league and this country has obviously seen, and it brought a lot of smiles to your face.
Yeah, that just listening to Holstie, I really, really enjoyed him as a coach. And that year was definitely special because, you know, how he came in and like kind of turned us around. You know, we didn't make any big moves, but we went from a second last place team to a, you know, we lost in 6 in the semifinals. So it was really nice to hear that. You know, it's obviously, you know, I look at my career and I just think it's been a lot of fun. And to hear someone like Holstie say those kind words, it's very touching, and I really appreciate that.
This kind of led me to an exercise where you're kind of the guinea pig. I want to come up with kind of a blueprint for the perfect import player. I don't know how this exercise is gonna turn out, but bear with me for the moment, because I polled some of your former teammates and again some other former coaches about you. But first of all, we need to tell and educate fans on how you got over here, because your entryway to Europe or entry point was Bolzano. And we've had this many, many times on our broadcast. Like, if you look at the first year import players that Bolzano brings in and where they have gone on and how much success they have enjoyed, basically everybody marvels at the quality of guys Bolzano brings in. So begs the question, how were you recruited? How does this process work out? Granted that there may have been changes in the process, but how did it work out for you back in the day when you were first contacted by Bolzano?
It's kind of funny. The year prior, I was playing in Rochester. And I was typical third, fourth line. I didn't get a ton of ice time. I was just, kind of really happy to be there. Just, I didn't think my hockey career was, going too far. I wanted to kind of do what I can in North America. And then obviously wanted to come to Europe at some point and play a couple of years. But that summer, I was having trouble finding a job in North America. So my agent, I think it was like August at the time, he's like, well, maybe you should start thinking about Europe. And I was like, okay, like, how does that work? And I started researching it, and I realized half the teams have already started. Everyone's already in the training camp. I was like, okay, a little bit behind the eight ball here. But my agent got in touch with Patrick Poloni, one of the big agents over here, especially in Austria, Switzerland. And he was able to get me a job in Bolzano after talking with Tom Pokel, obviously a great coach there too. And to be honest with you, I didn't know what to expect. I never really heard of the Austrian league or Bolzano in that fact. So I just did a little bit of research, and I said, this place looks awesome. Like, why not? Let's do it. And when I got over here, it was definitely a huge culture shock. But, that year was, like you say, when you think about some special years, that year was definitely amazing. We had a really close-knit team. I think because it was everyone's, first year away from North America, we had some great players. And I got lucky. I came in first year and, first year we win it. So kind of dumb luck, I think. And obviously for me, I was kind of playing, a third or fourth line role on the team. Just I came in super late. I think I missed the first two games of the year. And so just coming in late, I honestly had no idea what to expect. I think my first game in the league was a day of trip from Bolzano to Vienna. I think it was like 9.5 hours on a bus, and I'm sleeping, sitting up. I didn't know what to expect. I don't even think I had an iPad at the time. So, it was, looking back, I laugh, but at the same time, I was like, I'm so glad I stuck with it. And, it was difficult for me, obviously, with like family and friends back home and being so far away and kind of being on my own. But at the same time, I think it made me appreciate everything a little bit more. And obviously looking back now, I appreciate it all. And I could go back and just kind of, I smile every time I think about that year.
I want to dig a little deeper in regards to some of the things that you just mentioned, but there's an interesting coincidence because last week on this show, Emilio Romig talked for 75 minutes about his experiences, and he went to an NCAA school, played hockey there. He tried it in the minors. He pointed out at what point he felt that this wouldn't work for him in the minors. Now, you're playing minor league hockey too. You're playing for a kind of loaded Rochester team. I mean, good NHLers like Braden McNabb, just won the Stanley Cup. Marcus Foligno, Pizik, where we're talking about some great import players in Europe, TJ Brennan, Jerome Leduc, Matt McKenzie, a lot of them many of them we've seen in the Ebelin and Ice League too. And you've already alluded a little bit to it that you were playing on the fourth line in the American Hockey League team. But was there ever a point where you thought, Jesus, this is going nowhere? Or was it a series of coincidences that led you to seeking out kind of a hockey adventure in Europe?
I think that year in Rochester was definitely, my first year in the American League was really, really tough for me. I didn't play a ton. It was a huge learning curve. I went from being, a top line player in you know, college hockey. And just, you know, I loved college, every minute of it, from the games to everything else and beyond. And then I got to pro, you know, I had to learn how to be a pro. And I struggled with that. So fortunately for me, you know, I got another chance in the American League with Rochester after my year in Syracuse. And, you know, I had two really good coaches that kind of, you know, brought the fun back into it. And, you know, that was the year of the lockout. So we actually got quite a bit of time in Buffalo. And, you know, Buffalo's management really brought us along. We got to train at their facility. You know, we had their coaches come to practice. And just like their board got behind us. And so that was a lot of fun. You know, I kind of saw what pro hockey could be and how much fun it is and how cool that whole experience was. So I think after that year, you know, I definitely wanted to keep playing. Maybe the American Hockey League wasn't for me. So I thought maybe Europe would be a great learning curve, just like my first year was. So, you know, I always told myself when I was younger, you know, I didn't think I'd ever play in North America. I wanted to go to college. And then after college, I was thankful that I had the opportunity to play pro. So it's nothing that I ever planned. You know, some of these kids grow up and, you know, they're the best players on their team, 16, 17, 18, 19, and then they just go on to the next level like it's the next thing. But for me, you know, my 18-year-old year, I was playing junior A, and I actually missed the entire year because of a concussion / you know, neck issue. And looking back then, I thought that's when I was going to just like quit hockey. You know, I didn't think anything of it, but luckily I stuck with it. I hung around in the league for another year or two, and then finally got that scholarship. So I think for me, it was a little bit of that 18-year-old year, you know, and then after college, that year in Rochester that, you know, brought the fun back to playing hockey.
And I guess it just shows that a hockey career, if ever, really happens in a linear way, but with bumps and bruises, ups and downs, and that's just the way it is. And I guess it tells a lot about people, how they're taking the lows and how they're taking it to new highs. But setting aside those kind of things, one thing that you mentioned when coming over to Bolzano, not knowing what to expect, you called it a culture shock. And granted, 9.5 hour bus rides aren't the norm, or shouldn't be the norm in most of the leagues, obviously with a league that stretches so far from west to east or east to west, I guess it happens. But what was one moment where you felt culturally shocked?
I honestly think it was like the first week or two I was in Bolzano. I was living on my own. I didn't have a car at the time. I didn't have a cell phone, and the Wi-Fi didn't reach my room at the time. But I just remember, you know, I wasn't able to really talk to too many people back home, but I'd wake up early and, you know, I'd sit on my patio, and it was the most beautiful area I've ever been in. You know, our place had a pool, there was palm trees, the sun was shining. I was like, okay, I can get used to this. And, you know, I finally figured out how to make a coffee using the Bialetti espresso on the stovetop. So that once I got that, the hang of that, I thought, you know what, this was an awesome place to be. And, you know, obviously the language was different. I never played in a country that they didn't speak English. So that was difficult, you know, never played in a country, you know, just not having a cell phone or being able to talk to someone or just being the time difference. So I think all those factors kind of were just obviously difficult. But then, you know, you kind of rely on teammates. I had some really good teammates, like obviously Anton Bernard, like Bernie's brother, helped us out. Marco Insam, I remember he was like, come with me, I'll take you, get a cell phone, come with me, I'll show you this. And, you know, he was a great help. And And then on top of that, the imports that we had, you know, we all stuck together and, you know, we all carpooled to games and we all hung out, played cards after practice. And so I think aside from like the initial shock of just not having the comforts of home, you know what, once you got over it and with the help of obviously teammates, it was a special place and still is. You know, I'm still in the same area that I started, and you know, it's one of the nicest areas I've ever seen in my life.
I got two more questions regarding that year, maybe era of your career, and then we get to the exercise. First, how hard is it to go back to coffee a la Tim Hortons once you've had proper Italian coffee?
You know, it's not that hard because it's the convenience that I enjoy now. I got two young kids, so I just need something quick and I need it on the go. So when we go back home, obviously I stop for Tim Hortons quite a bit, but nothing beats a quick little espresso. I always think I'm like one, you know, one of the national team breaks, a few guys and I were driving down south towards Italy, and we stopped at like a rest stop, and I remember trying to get a coffee, thinking in my mind it's going to be Tim Hortons, and you know order it, and then you get back in the car, and no, it was a shot of espresso at the counter, and I was like, you know what, this is actually a better way to drink it, and it's a better quality coffee. So I love the Italian way of life here, but you know, there's something special about a Timmy's too.
I guess a lot of people can relate to loving the Italian way of life, and that also expands to a story that I never really got 100% confirmed, and now you have to be the one to confirm it or maybe deny it, but the unexpected success that Bolzano was enjoying that year obviously brought you to the finals. And I've heard stories that during that year, a finals appearance wasn't planned by club masterminds and everything. And that also accounted for the flats and apartments import players were living in. And I've heard stories that import players had to move during the playoffs because no one assumed in their wildest dreams that they indeed would make the finals. So contracts had to be longer than anticipated. New apartments needed to be found. Was that indeed the case?
I want to say yes. I remember that because I think in our contracts, like it said, I want to say it was like March. And then this was like, I think we won middle of April. So, things got extended. I remember one of my buddies, he was a D-man. He ended up moving in with me. And I had just a Murphy bed in the one room, a one bedroom with a Murphy bed. So he slept on the Murphy bed every night and I had my own bedroom, but it wasn't too bad. I think it was like one or two players maybe. And I think the reason was, you know, we lived in a really like, it's such a touristy area. And, you know, beautiful apartments. So I guess, you know, they needed the apartments back and, we had a couple hockey players in them. So let's get them to live with each other. Cause it's a lot easier than, having, you know, telling people they can't come for a vacation.
Maybe it's just a friendly reminder for clubs. If they want to increase the championship odds, just hand out contracts that end in March and see what happens. Because I guess that are problems that you want to have come playoff time.
Yeah, that was a great problem to have.
I mentioned the exercise that I want to try to do with you. Coming up with a blueprint for a good to great import player. And I pulled, apart from Holstie, three different people you crossed paths with past couple of years. Okay, it's a difficult thing to say. But I pulled Tom Rowe, Giga Panse, and Anton Bernard. Three people who have appeared on this podcast before, three people whose advice and insights I really cherish. And I told them, you know what? Please explain Rick Schofield in one word to me. And each and everyone got back to me. And Tom Rowe, of course, broke the rules of the competition already because he returned with two words. He said, or texted me, extremely professional. Giga Panzer texted me, or he sent a long text talking about your friendship and how far you go back, obviously winning that championship together. And how good a friend you've been to the Panzer family and obviously the other way around. Giga Panzer called you or tried to describe you in one word by using reliable. And then last but not least, Anton Bernhard said elegant. And elegant, I mean, there's a visually appealing part of elegant in the German way of saying, but it could also include being smart and nifty. So there are several different meanings, and I probably should have asked Anton which exact meaning he wanted to get to. But obviously the blueprint brings us to or the blueprint for becoming an elegant, reliable, and extremely professional hockey player. That would obviously equal in that exercise Rick Schofield. So let's try to go through it one by one. How do you become extremely professional as an import?
That's a good question. You know what? My whole career, you know, I just believed in, you know, just trying to do the right things and working hard. You know, if your coach says stop on pucks and get the pucks deep, that's what you have to do. And you know, aside from what the coach says, you know, just being prepared every day, taking care of your body and, you know, being smart away from the rink. You know what? I think that's, you know, I'm not a flashy guy, you know. So I think just being able to show up every day and try to just put the time in, because you know what, you only have to go to the rink for a few hours a day. And while you're there, you know, it's easy just to do your job and then, you know, you leave. I think that's the best part about being professional.
Now, a close relative to being extremely professional, as Tom Rowe labeled it, would be reliable. What do you think made Giga Panzer say reliable? Why is he labeling you as reliable?
Well, you know what? I think I've been pretty consistent in my career. I think that's one thing I've always kind of been proud of myself for. You know, what you see is kind of what you get. You know, not going to go dangle down the whole ice like some players in this league, but you know, I just keep doing the same things every night, and hopefully that breeds success. So just being able to be there and like support the players, I think, in, you know, in a hockey sense, reliable. You know, I always pride myself on, you know, being a good outlet pass for D-men, you know, so that if they're in trouble, I'm always there for them, and vice versa for wingers too. So you know, me and Zig go way back. I actually just saw him last week at Oktoberfest. So, always great to see him, and for him to call me reliable, you know, I really appreciate that.
And then Anton Bernhard texted elegant. Which way you want to go? What suits your style? What suits you best? The visual appeal of the word elegant, the smarts, or the niftiness?
Probably not the looks, because I know how good of a dresser Anton is. And I, you know, when I played with him, I was always looking up to him, seeing what to wear.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir. He's an analyst now on Pulse. And imagine with this face, my face, standing next to him. Jesus.
Yeah, he's a good looking guy, and he's got great style. I'll give him that. And so definitely not looks, but maybe the smarts. You know, I try to be a smart player, and I try to read the game as best I can. You know, I played hockey for a long time. You know, it hasn't really changed much. So I think that's what's helped me probably the most in my career, is just being able to kind of read the game. I might not have to be the fastest player or the, you know, the hardest shot, but if you can get into the right areas at the right time, it's going to increase your, your chances for success. So
maybe just maybe an aspiring import player who's now in North America and intends to come over some years down the road, listens to this and puts some notes into a notebook, jotting down what it needs to be successful in overseas leagues. And brings me to one of the interesting things that Holste mentioned during his voice message that I played earlier. He obviously implored management to sign you and Giga Panse fast because he labeled it as magic. Obviously, it doesn't or didn't happen, and the negotiating part of the hockey business always a difficult one. And if we go fast forward to what happened last year, you coming in very or relatively late, I think it was at the end of October, to a Nuremberg team that went on to have success with you. And Tom Rowe even jumped on the show last year and called you one of the big factors why they were able to be more successful than the time before you were brought in. How, first of all, long story put short, how did you wind up not having or maybe not being on a team on opening day last year?
Yeah, that was definitely a situation that I would not want to live again. Leaving VLOC, having surgery that year, obviously there were some complications and some disagreements that were had. And, you know, I felt like I needed a change. I've been in the league at that point, 8 years? And I just said to myself, you know, I'm 33 at the time. I would like to try a different league or see a different part of Europe. So, you know, that's what my goal was. There was some family stuff going on back home with family member who wasn't doing well. So obviously there was talks of me maybe retiring, and I had a little bit of retirement on my mind, but luckily that didn't happen. And so, you know what, it got to a point where I was looking at other leagues. I thought, you know, this is my last chance, maybe one more year in a different league. And I had a contract offered from a different league. It was, you know, I was really excited about it. And then it got pulled as fast as it came in, it got pulled. And then I kind of figured out that, you know, it's not as easy as I thought trying to change leagues. And at that point, you know, it was already August, or I was in talks with another team in this league, and you know, I turned them down because I had this other offer come in. And, you know, that other offer, looking back now, I was like, oh, that would have been the perfect place. But then, you know, I was in talks with Tom, honestly, since August or September, and he's like, I'd love to bring you in. And, you know, I think Tom might be my biggest fan, and I appreciate him. He's done so much for my career, honestly, from my time in Linz, and then obviously giving me a chance last year to play in the Dell was fantastic. But, you know, it was in September, and he's like, I want to bring you in, but we just don't have a spot for you. And then, you know, fortunate for me, unfortunate for the other two players, we had two centermen go down in about a week in, I think it was like late September, early October. And he called me up and was like, hey, can you get on a plane next week? I was like, yeah, I can do it. I told the wife, I said, hey, we gotta move out of the house. we're going to Germany. She was pretty excited. So honestly, that whole experience was tough. I was, you know, home August, September, and October. And, you know, I've never been home for those months, and just seeing teams play regular season games. I had friends that I was keeping in touch with, especially in VLOC and Linz. And, you know, just I had serious FOMO. You know, I just wanted to get over there. And, you know, luckily it worked out in Germany, because that was, honestly, that was one of the highlights of my career so far, just playing in that league and just experiencing, that side of it. So, you know, I kind of got my wish. I got to go in a different league. It was definitely more stressful than I imagined, but it happened, and definitely grateful for it.
Two things for all the German-speaking listeners, which are most of the listeners of this podcast. FOMO is fear of missing out for all the people who have never heard it. And the last question that I asked, where I eventually got to a point that I wanted to hammer home, I phrased it a little complicated. The thing I'm always curious about is how picky you can be with certain clubs and what they offer, or if you look at it from the other side, what a club or what an organization has to bring to the table for you to say, okay, let's try this, because you've been to so many places, you've seen so many different teams in this league, especially now with Nuremberg, that other league, that probably better league in Europe. But what has to be right for you to pull the trigger from your end? Is it the coach? Is it the organization? Is it the players? Is it a mix of all those things?
I think it's definitely a mix. I mean, money's a huge issue. This is why we play it. So there's got to be, you know, can't come over for here for free, even though I think I would sometimes. So money's an issue. And then just the organization, how they treat you. Reputation, and obviously for me, like I have a family. I have two kids and a wife and a dog, so you know the city has to be obviously a selling point too. And you know, fortunately for me, I played in some beautiful areas, and you know, I am kind of spoiled the cities that I've been living in. Even last year in Nuremberg, a beautiful city. So I think it's all that. Obviously having a coach that you know, or you know, has a great reputation, that helps. Nothing worse than, you know, getting somewhere and you find out the coach hates you or he doesn't like the way you play, and then you're like, well, I'm here now, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But you know, like last year, fortunate for me, like I knew Tom, he knew me, and you know, I think I hit the ground running because he just said, just play how we did and you know, you'll be fine. And obviously the rest is history there. I think I had a decent year, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of learning. But yeah, to go back to like, to pick the right spot, it's a combination. I mean, as a Canadian or as an import, you know, you're leaving home to go live somewhere for at least 8 months. So it's gotta fit, you know, check most of the boxes. And, you know, for me, family and how comfortable they are is obviously one of the biggest boxes that needs to be checked.
With your experiences in playing in the DEL last year, you can be the perfect judge in this instance to help us solve an age-old question, because a lot of fans are always wondering quality of play. What kind of league is the quote-unquote better one? It's been going on for many years now, and obviously games in the Champions Hockey League are a good indication of where things are going. I personally put the DL ahead of the Ice Hockey League, but if you'd have to compare and contrast the leagues and the styles of play, how would you compare and contrast them?
That's, you know, it's something I've been thinking of like the last year since being there, even playing there last year. I'm like, okay, like how does this compare to the Austrian league? Or, and to be honest, I don't know. It's such a hard question. I think because of the money that's in Germany and how, you know, it's 10 times the size of Austria, you're going to have better individual players, especially like the national players, like the guys Munich has, the guys Mannheim has, the guys Cologne has, like they're, you know, top players internationally. And then you bring in some, you know, phenomenal import players from all around the world, you know, guys that played in the KHL, and there's just more of them. So I think, you know, the top end teams in Germany are amazing. I think sort of great teams. But then when you look at a team like, you know, Red Bull or, you know, Bolzano's been top of the league for the last couple of years, like they compete with German teams all the time. So it's, I think on average, you know, Germany, just based on sheer numbers, probably has a few better players. But at the same time, it's a very similar style of play. Very North American, I would say. So it's, you know, I'd give the slight edge to Germany, but at the same time, I think this league is, you know, there's a ton of great players and a lot of good teams, and it's really hard to kind of compare, because you see it in preseason. Obviously, preseason isn't a great judge of teams, but, you know, you have teams in this league beating teams in Germany and vice versa. So it's really tough to compare. I mean, it's the one thing that I just noticed more was how big the arenas were in Germany. And that just means more money for the teams, bigger media. The, you know, the television coverage was amazing. You could watch 6 games a night just on your app on the phone. And, you know, it's something that maybe this league doesn't have, just because of the, we don't have the population size that Germany has, and that's just something you got to face with. But at the same time, it's maybe something this league can kind of strive for, is getting that quality, because there are some, you know, it's really good hockey, I think, and especially when you have teams like Red Bull who, you know, they keep signing amazing players and they got amazing national team players. It's, you know, they're right up there.
Hats off. Great answer. Very diplomatic at times, but some of the issues that you tackled are also being brought up time and time again by fans, our media members. So very good look at the two leagues, obviously. But when we get back to this league, the Win Today Ice Hockey League, a lot of high-profile players retired this offseason. In total, the league lost more than 7,000 games played, with the likes of Thomas Koch, Kevin Moderer, Daniel Oberkofler, Martin Schumnik, Rafael Rotter, Andrew Sarrow, and so many more. Now, with you being 36 years old and probably in the latter half of your career, how long do you intend to do this?
Until the wheels fall off. You know, we'd love to stay here as long as possible. I got my daughter in kindergarten now, so hopefully she'll learn more German than I have in the next year or so. But I can see myself playing for a couple more years. You know, it's been a lot of fun. And to be honest with you, we love being over here. It's especially, I mean, obviously Pustertal, we're spoiled here, but even, you know, Linz was a beautiful city, Bielok, beautiful city, Nuremberg, beautiful city. It's, you just can't beat it.
I hate to bring up the age question one last time, promise, but is there anything that itches a little more, is maybe a little more nagging at the age of 36 than it was at the age of 26 when you first came over?
Oh, you know what? Luckily for me, my body's kind of held up. I had surgery a couple of years ago when I was in Bielok, but it's more... looking at it, you know, it doesn't hurt. But with 2 kids, you know, just, I don't get it then. It's, we got home on 2:30, 3 o'clock last night from Linz, and we were back at the rink around, you know, 9 or 10, and I'm up anyways with the kids, so it's not like I get to sleep in. So that's just one thing when you get
no,
to this
no
age.
Mercy. It's 6 a.m. 6:30, the kids are there no matter what.
Yeah, it's that's a guarantee. But I mean, that would happen if I wasn't playing hockey, so I can't complain. As long as, you know, my wife's been really good, she helps me out. But you know, for me, I've been lucky. I you know, there's nothing that I wake up in the morning and go, oh, I don't know if I can do this anymore. It's like, oh, I have to do 3 more things before I'm able to hop on the ice now, instead of maybe when I first came over, I could, you know, jump out of bed, grab a coffee and hit the ice, and I'd be totally fine now. The warm-ups tend to get a little bit longer, but I think that's about it.
I want to talk about one sporty thing because there is one biggie ahead this week. It's the game against Bolzano, the battle of South Tyrol, if you will. It's a Bolzano team that you dominated in the one preseason game 3.5 weeks ago, but you're going to see him again this upcoming Friday in Bolzano with the new head coach. They finally have the first win of the year under their belt, so one might assume that this is a totally different Bolzano team than the one that you saw 3.5 weeks ago. A lot of different things, but one thing that has always remained the same is the intensity when Bolzano and Pusatal played. How aware are you of this rivalry, and how big of a topic is this game already in the locker room?
You know what, just going back a couple weeks ago when we played them in exhibition, you know, you kind of hear, you know, people outside the rink talking about how important it is. You know, it's a lot of pride on the line, obviously, big rivalry. But I think for most of the guys, it's a game. You know, we haven't talked about the Bolzano game at all. I'm sure they haven't talked about us at all. You know, they're focusing on their next game. They got their coach back and they're a great team. You know, when we played them, I think they were in the middle of a Champions League, you know, stretch. They played two hard games. They had to come play us the day before they were leaving for Switzerland or something. So, you know, I think they're a great team. I think they're, you know, very, very similar team to what they had last year that finished, you know, what was it, game 7 in the finals. Could have easily been their year. But, you know, looking, obviously we have a game against Klagenfurt tomorrow, but after that, you know, Thursday, we'll focus in on that game. And, you know, for the fans, it's obviously great to kind of have that that derby mentality, and it's definitely a tough game. Anytime you go to Bolzano, it's one of the hardest places to win in. So it's going to be a fun game, and hopefully for us, we can continue some success. Don't want to give them any more than they need, because I know how good of a team they are, and you know they've done this before. You know, they have a bad couple games or something, and they make it one change, and all of a sudden they're one of the best teams again. It's I think the players they have are some of the best in the league. Obviously playing with like a guy like Parlett from last year, you know, he's a top D-man, and you know what, I got a lot of good things to say about them. It's going to be a tough game.
It's going to be a great game. I hope your podcast debut went well for you too. I really enjoyed the past hour. Thanks so much for doing this. Keep adding to the 400 points in the league. Wish you all the best, not only for the upcoming two games against Klagenfurt and Bolzano, but also for the season. Hope to do this once again 10 years down the road when we celebrate your 20th in the league.
You know what? This is a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Martin, for having me on. Like I said, my first podcast, I really enjoyed it. And as much as I hate hearing myself talk, I might have to listen to this one when it comes out on Wednesday. So thanks so much.
Win today, hockey.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn, und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt.
Die Lippen drehen statt nur der Ball.
Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh. Leistung.